It's always entertaining to be joined by a former NHLer, two-time Stanley Cup winner, 32-goal scorer, and also just recovering from hernia surgery. Dave Lumley joins us. Lummer, how you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. This is tough. My body of steel is no more.
Now, isn't this the second hernia surgery you've had?
No. Okay. No, this is the only one.
Well, you've been waiting this long to get in?
Well, yeah, I was diagnosed with it back in June,
yeah.
But it didn't hurt. It wasn't bothering me at all. And finally, they called me about a month ago and got me in the next week. So it's been 3 weeks today.
Nice. How's that? So that spring in your stomach is gone, because isn't that really what happens when you have the hernia? It's kind of like you got that spring there.
Well, there's a hole, and they go in and they drill three holes in your stomach and they go in with a scope and they put a mesh covering. The darn thing is, like I said, it didn't hurt at all. And I've been laid up for 3 weeks. I haven't done anything. I think the doctor slid a couple of beanbag implants in my butt while he was there. I'm soft now.
So will you be ready to play in a month?
Oh, of course, yeah. They said it's 5 to 6 weeks before I can do pretty much anything I want.
Oh, okay.
It's still pretty sore, but if I had to go out today, I would take one for the team.
Like if it was playoffs, Dave, would you be playing this weekend?
Absolutely.
What's the most painful injury you played through?
Oh, easily a separated shoulder. Bar none. You can't even lift your arm above your shoulder. I mean, you can get your hand up to about shoulder height. And them trying to take my jersey off and my shoulder pads, it was like I just wanted to die. It was easily the most painful by far.
Did you get frozen when you had that? Like, did they shoot anything in you to at least kind of gnaw the pain a bit?
No, they just, well, back in the day, I mean, the doctors would do much different things now. They just said, see you later, see you in 6 weeks. I didn't do anything. Like, I didn't even ride the bike or anything. And then the darn thing is, I came back for the playoffs. And the very first shift back, I was cutting through the center, and I got a buddy pass, and I got dinged, and I ended up breaking the shoulder.
Ooh.
Broke the clavicle, so I was laid up for most of the summer.
Now, you called it a buddy pass. Is that a polite way of saying a suicide pass?
Exactly.
Now,
thanks, buddy.
So when you get a buddy pass and you get rocked, like, do you go back to the defenseman later and say, hey, like, what's going on here, or is that just kind of part and parcel of it?
You can't really go and say anything because why didn't I know the guy was there?
Okay.
So half of it's my fault too. It's probably both our faults.
Nice.
So you can't really give him too much grief because, I probably shouldn't have been in that position in the first place.
Dave, the face-off, of course, for Alzheimer's is a huge event. It's a lot of fun. You share a lot of stories. And I know we've had you share quite a few of the funnier ones over the years. I notice you're on Twitter now, and I've told people to follow you because you're actually pretty funny in 140 characters. Once you get past that, it's debatable, but in 140, you're pretty funny.
It's tough though, isn't it, 140, to get a story in there.
I thought you were going to say it's tough to watch the order game sometimes.
Well, that too. That's really tough.
Yeah.
But that Twitter thing's pretty, I like it. You get some good responses. Although, being a radio host, you've got your opinion on something. Probably 50% of the people like it and 50%, don't.
Oh.
Agree or disagree. That's the way it is.
Some days it's fun to say something just because it'll irritate some people who go off the deep end over it. It's pure entertainment. If you want to do that on a Friday night, you just go on there and say something that and you'll always get the same people who seem to just, wait for your tweet and then want to respond to it instantly. It's actually quite entertaining, so you should try that sometime.
I'll get right on. That's what I'll do every Friday night from now on.
You should, seriously? Oh, if you did it Friday, actually, you do it Thursday nights. Because Friday night, Dave, a man about town like yourself, you're not sitting at home, are you?
Oh, no. Well, actually, work, church, and home. You know the way I roll. That's why this Alzheimer weekend just throws me all out of kilter.
I know. You're just like, what's this staying up late and partying stuff? I totally forgot how to do that.
It's a fun weekend, though, isn't it? You played it. It's great.
It is a lot of fun. Now, would you, if the team that drafts you, would you take them on a tour of David's and tell them? Because isn't that where you guys used to hang out and party all the time?
Well, yeah, we did. Actually, I was at an Oil Kings game. I got asked by the Oilers to come to one of the Oil Kings game. And Mike Riddle, the silver medalist, was there.
Yeah.
Mike Riddle's dad, Bob Riddle, was a partner in David's.
Really?
Along with David Vaughn and Mike Calverley back in the day. Yeah.
Well, David Vaughn.
I was in Phoenix with Mike, one of the other owners, and we went to Bob Riddle's house. He never even mentioned his son, Mike, and how good he was and what he was doing. And boom, I go up to Kevin Lowe's box after this little thing, hot stove thing we did downstairs at Rexall, and there's Bob and his wife up there, and Mike with his medal. It was great.
Yeah, we had Mike in studio. Actually, David Vaughn's daughter, Jill, is my wife's best friend. So I've heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is the smallest 1 million-person town I've ever seen. It's not 6 degrees of separation. It's like 3.
Yeah. Now, it was such a different time back then, but like you guys partied as a team, but you really kind of partied with fans a lot of nights too. It was a different time. Not everybody was taking your picture. Like a lot of guys just sat there and had a beer and, you know, chatted about their life as much as you did about theirs, right?
Well, yeah, that's why David's was so great. I mean, you get to know everybody that's in there. It's like the old Cheers TV show, you know. You go in there and everybody's, hey, Lummer, hey, Samay, hey, Hunts, but it's not this gaga fan thing, you know. It was really a comfortable place to go. It was lots of fun. But good thing no cell phone cameras back then. Big trouble.
Dave Lumley joins us, former NHLer. Of course, the Alzheimer Face-Off gets going April 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th. How's your playing skills, Dave? Can you still score 30?
Absolutely, if I have to, but I'm more a team guy. You know that. I'm a passer. I'm like Gretz. I'm a feeder. It's going to be at Shaw Convention Center this year, right?
The draft will be there, yes, and then the games won't, though. There's no ice surface. The games will be in Leduc. So.
And the luncheon.
The luncheon will be there, yes. Are you telling Alex
Ovechkin?
Frank, yeah, who was your play? Like Frank Mahovlich, was he one of your heroes growing up? Like who were the guys you idolized as a young lad?
I grew up in Toronto, so I was a Leafs fan. My dad had season tickets. But I was in a car accident when I was in the fourth grade. And when I was in the hospital, and we've all done this. They've asked for volunteers when I was with the Oilers. They said, who wants to go to this appearance? Who wants to go sign autographs here? Who wants to go to the hospital and visit the kids? I'm sure it was a situation like that. But when I was in the hospital, when I was in the fourth grade, Davey Keon comes in to my room. And he talked to me for a while. And he says, I'll be right back. He went out in the car and got a stick, brought it back in, signed it, get well soon, your friend David Keon. Everybody always called him Davey, but he signed it David Keon, you know, captain of the Leafs. So I wore number 14. He was my idol from there on. I wore number 14 every single year that I could growing up. Even when I came to the Oilers and they asked me what number I wanted, 14 was B.J. McDonald. And I thought, okay, 7 and 7, 7. That's Ron Chipperfield. 7, 14, 21. Stan Weir, 21. The reason I took 20 was it was as close to 14 as I could get all those years later.
Really? Now, Now B.J. McDonald didn't last very long. You didn't want to switch once he left?
No. 20 was pretty much, I was on my way to legend dumb.
Now, because Dave Keon did that to you, Dave, when you became an NHL player, did you go out of your way to try to make a kid's day like he did for you?
I'll tell you what, it's too bad that every single guy who makes it to the NHL, now I don't want to say why can't they all get hit by a car, why can't they all get some disease, but it's too bad that everybody couldn't experience what I experienced, because he was so nice and it had such an effect on me. And this is why when I hear people telling stories about, you know, they went to an autograph signing session and a guy wouldn't even look at me, he'd sign the picture and then look at his cell phone, he's on his cell phone. Like, I really make time for people, and it's all because of that one visit from him, because I know how important it is. Well, here's another example. I mean, I got invited. A friend got a hold of the Oilers, a friend of a girl who's, I guess I was her favorite player for like 35 years. And she said to her friend, it was her 50th birthday party out in Millett, don't get me anything for my birthday. If you're not getting me Dave Lumley, I don't want anything. Well, the friend gets a hold of the Oilers. They get a hold of me. I get a hold of the friend. I end up showing up out there in Millett Saturday night. There's like 50 people waiting in the driveway. She had no idea I was coming. And I got out of the limo and I gave her a rose. That woman, you should have seen her. She was hanging on to me and crying and shaking. She was so excited. It was just so much fun. It was more fun for me, I think, than her. It was great.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't care who you are. When someone's that excited to see you, it doesn't matter if it's a stranger. You're feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Her husband was saying that he thinks that I'm related to him because there's more pictures of me in the house than him. Yeah, a little creepy.
And the fact that she said Dave a few times in the sheets, that's probably not the best thing either.
I actually had lunch with the husband today out in Leduc. Yeah, we're best friends.
Oh, nice. Nice. Dave Lumley joins us. Dave, you watch and you talked about now how, the game has definitely changed. And you talked about that fandom and, fans, yes, they were diehard Oiler fans, but it doesn't seem to the level of, crazy is maybe the wrong word, but people just want to say they know the Oiler, say, hey, I met the guy and get a gazillion pictures, rather than actually take a few moments to get to know the player.
Well, I don't know what it's like, but we had lots of things. I mean, back then the Oilers were new in the NHL. And they had us out signing autographs and doing appearances all over the place, trying to get build up interest in the team, so to speak, I guess. And I don't know if the guys are really that into it anymore here. You're talking about the fans just wanting to get a quick picture. Maybe it's that memorabilia thing. Who knows? Maybe they're just selling the pictures. I don't know. It is a different time, though, isn't it?
It's very different that way. And it's unfortunate because I think the players you talked about, I think they would like it more if there was a little bit more of the human interaction rather than just the adulation and the stardom factor of it.
Well, I'm not sure. The team's so sorry right now. Are they idolizing these players now? I don't know. It seems to be still lots of Hall and Eberle jerseys and Nuge. And they don't really know the guys that, and they're not even playing that well on the ice. I think it's the fact that they're in the NHL. They made it. They must be pretty good guys.
Dave Lumley joins us. You watch the games, Dave, and people here, and it's unfair to make the comparison of this young group to the Oilers of the 80s because you had some of the greatest players of all time. How many guys, six guys in that team that are in the Hall of Fame? Like, that's rare for any team. How much of your attitude of winning came from Slats? How much of it came from the players pushing one another?
Oh, geez. I think there's so many factors that go into it. One thing that I took away, and this is going to sound funny, but Peter Pockingham put us through a two-day course on positive thinking. And I'll never forget, he says, do you want to be a bricklayer or do you want to be a cathedral builder? And I've just taken that to heart, and I've just been such a positive guy. That's one of the things I took out of it, that I think everything's going to work out. My brother-in-law says I could fall in a pile of crap and find diamonds. And it's just the positive thinking. Slats, what he would do, and you remember that goal-scoring streak I had?
Yep. Well, it's impossible to forget. You always tell me about it.
Yeah, but when that was nearing its end, or at its end, Slats came to me and said, listen, we could probably keep going like this with Yari on the other wing, but I think we got to put you on with Mess and Andy. Get those two guys going. So you know what he did there? He demoted me. But he made it sound like a positive move for the team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, when he comes to you and says, Dave, we need to put you with Messi and Anderson to get them going, you're like, I'm leaving Gretz, but yeah, that's right. I'm going to get those guys going. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. It sounds crazy, but that's the way you do it. And then after my run with them went, they said, Slot says, our check-in line has never been the same. Gangrene has never been the same since you've been moving around with these other two lines. We got to get you back there because we got to check some big lines coming up. So that's, there's something right there. But as far as the players, that can only take you so far. We just loved the game. We loved winning. Our attitude in the beginning was, we don't win many games, but we sure have a good time. Well, to have the combination of this, having that good time and then to start winning, it was just so much fun. Nobody wanted it to end. I think that's why we just pushed each other.
Yeah, the pushing one another, Dave. How does that balance out? Because I hear, a lot of the players have said the practices were very competitive and you guys played a lot of fun games and they never left the ice and Slats would have to come out and get Gretzky and Messier and the guys, get off the ice. You got to save yourself for the games. In the practice, who are the leaders that pushed one another? And was it just verbally pushing or was it strictly and you'd go in the corner and you'd get an elbow from someone and you're like, well, man, I better get my elbows up if I want to play in practice?
No, I think, and I take you back to when I came back from Hartford, when I was with the Oilers for all those years. And then I went to Hartford for 4 months and I played regular shift, power play, penalty kicking. I played a lot. When I came back and had my first practice with the Oilers again, I couldn't keep up. So to your point, what it was you'd see Anderson going so fast down the wing. You'd see Gretz going full speed mess. You had to up your game or you just looked like a fool out there against, with those guys. So that's more what it was. Like, the guys were so good that they made everybody else around them be better. We had to be better if you didn't want to be embarrassed.
Dave Lumley joins us, talking a little bit about the orders of past and the present. And, you know, that obviously they were that skilled, and so I guess maybe there is an embarrassment factor involved in it. How much of your practices were done on systems back then, Dave? How much was it on just competing, battling, skill development? How did a practice back then go?
It was all, everything was high speed. It was all fast, high tempo, everything at top speed. The only real, there weren't a lot of systems that we worked on. The only new thing that Slats implemented was instead of just when you get to the center line or the other team's blue line and you're all by yourself, you know, curl around, regroup, as he put it. Just regroup and, you know, put the puck back to the defenseman. Maybe guys are making a change. Give them time to change. It's tough enough to get that puck, so when you get it, why give it away? And that was really the only thing. And when we had that outdoor game, we had a practice at Commonwealth, and he said, okay, we're going to do the regroup drill. Everybody did it. He came up to me and says, holy mackerel, like, you guys have never been away.
Yeah, it's funny how certain things that you remember, and that made it fun, right? When it's high speed, your practices probably didn't have to go that long because everything was high tempo, go, go, go. And are you a firm believer, Dave, that you practiced like you played? And how much time did you work on like power plays or penalty kill?
Not very much, if I remember. Like, we had such skilled players, and you know, our offensive talents were so huge that guys, we didn't have to work on that a lot. But what was your other question? I forgot what you said.
Did you work lots on penalty kill either, or not?
Well,
really?
We had penalty killers out there.
Yeah.
But again, I hearken you talk about practicing how you play. When I was in Hartford, like, it was just so brutal. The pace was so slow. And then when that whistle blew, whenever it was, 50, 60 minutes, an hour, whatever it was, when the whistle blew, every single guy just made a beeline off the ice. It was like night and day. I hated it down there. It was so much fun to come back where guys loved to play and, you know, were like rink rats.
So, Dave, when you went into a new organization and you saw that, did you vocalize that to say, hey, guys, like, this is not a winner's attitude. We've got to change this. Or can one player do that?
Well, even though I had a Stanley Cup ring, I didn't wear the ring, first of all, when I was down there.
Okay.
And I just didn't think, being a new guy, it was my place to just come in there. I mean, you got to remember, I'd only been in the league, I think, 4 years. No, I guess 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
We won the Stanley Cup in our fifth year, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 5 years. I guess that sounds like I'm kind of a veteran. But, Ronnie Francis was there, and they had, like, Pat Boutette. They had a bunch of veteran players already there. So I didn't think it was my place to say anything. But, there was a couple of times, actually, the coach came in, and Emil Francis, remember the Cat?
Oh, yes, I'm a Hartford guy.
He walked in one day, and I was at the blackboard drawing up I think it might have been the Rangers, what they were doing on their power play and what we should do to combat it. And I found out the next day that they had talked about making me the captain of the team. But then they heard I was going to retire because it sucked so bad.
So now,
you know where the C went.
Yeah. So in 1984-85, you were with Hartford, and you'd been claimed on waivers by them, right? Because that's when Slats had given you that big contract, hoping the teams wouldn't claim you. Then did you say, okay, guys, I'm retiring, and that's why they put you back on waivers?
That's exactly right. I put the word out amongst the guys, and it drifted upstairs because the Cat called me in. And he says, "Well, we were out of the playoffs. We had no chance. And that was a pretty big contract for back then that I had. And he just asked me outright. He says, are you going to retire after this year? Because if you are, we're going to put you on waivers because we're not going to make the playoffs. And I just said, yeah, probably. So, and being that I came from Edmonton, they had the first pick. There's a real lesson in not burning your old bridges right there.
Yeah.
You know, I could easily have said, well, geez, we just won a cup and they're getting rid of them. They're not protecting me. Or I could have said a million things. But I said, listen, I'm going to have an oiler tattooed on my butt, the rest of my life. And nothing but great memories here. And all of a sudden, 4 months later, I'm back.
And you got your second cup. Nothing wrong with that. Dave Lumley joins us. Dave, I want to get your thoughts now. Being in Edmonton, I know you go to the games, you watch them. What do you see as the areas of concern that need to change for this Oilers team?
Oh, geez. we've beaten this dead horse all year, haven't we? Have we not? The wrong combination of forwards. Better, they need better defense. And you know what I like, though? At least McTavish, he's making an effort, you know? Like, I love the moves with the goalies. I think they're much better than what we've had. So that's I don't think they have to worry about that going into the next year. But holy man, the size on the front end, and you know, they keep just switching those top six guys amongst each other. And what are they averaging? 2.5 games, 4? We're supposed to be this offensive team, juggernaut. We're not scoring that many goals, and we're too small to... I mean, we got some big teams that we have to beat to make the playoffs. I mean, Anaheim, San Jose, and L.A. And what do they all have in common? They're huge, and they're talented. That's just in our Pacific Division. You know, you got St. Louis, Colorado, and Chicago, and the other division. We got a long ways to go before we're going to make the playoffs.
Dave, always good to catch up with you. If people want to draft Dave Lumley, why should Dave Lumley be the first overall pick in April?
Well, I think Marty or Brian Trottier will, but to be third overall, you're going to get lots of fun stories, and we're going to have a hell of a weekend.
You're saying Kopp won't go 1 or 2? Interesting.
Oh, yeah, so.
No. That's good. That's good. I like it.
He should be fourth. Big Kopp fourth. I'm doing better than he is.
Exactly. He never scored in 12 consecutive games, Dave.
I know. He sucked.
Yeah. Like that record, you're probably to be pretty confident. That record likely will last forever for the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, well, like Gret says, records are made to be broken.
True.
I saw that interview the other day, and but I think he's lying, too. Who's going to score 92 goals again?
There's no chance.
No chance.
That record. But look right now on the Edmonton Oilers, and if you look at their team, currently, like you scored in 12 straight games. So, you know, right. I'm not a mathematician. That means you need at least 12, and that's with no double goals. The Oilers right now only have 4 guys who have scored more than 12 goals all season.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. You know, when the only time I think about it is when I'm watching a game and somebody says, oh, and so-and-so scored to extend his point streak to 10 games. Like, that's a big deal to get a point in 10 straight games.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty magical while it was happening, but I am a little bit surprised it's lasted so long.
No, I think that one's a very... Do you know how many points or how many goals did you get in this? Like, you must have had a few multiple goal games in that streak,
yeah,
no?
I had 15 and 12.
15 and 12. Nice.
And then the 13th game was against Calgary, down in Calgary. They put like 2 guys on me, followed me all over the ice.
You had like
remember I told you the next game back was against Minnesota. I got 3 goals, 3 assists.
Oh, so basically you had 18 in 14 games. Not bad.
Right. Yeah, I was second star of that game. That 7 points
from the Weasel. Oh, yeah. Only Gretzky can overshadow you, right? When you get 6 and somehow he gets 7.
The hat and 3 helpers. Holy second star.
6-point night, you're not even the first star. Wow, that's brutal. Hopefully you gave him the gears after that game. What a selfish guy, eh?
Yeah.
Jeez. Hey, Lumber's got 6. I'm not going to go for 7. I'm just going to hang off for tonight. Dave, always good to share stories with you. We'll see you soon.
All right, man. Keep your head up in the tourney.